How are environmental groups working to defuse climate bomb projects? And can China's grid handle the uptick of renewable energy projects? Welcome to the Climate Recap from the Beckosphere Climate Corner, your go-to place for international and U.S.-based climate news. I'm Becky Hogue, a science writer. Today is Wednesday, June 8th. Let's jump right into the news you need to start your day. Let's start with some climate events. The famine continues to worsen in Somalia, where now nearly 250,000 people are at risk of starvation. According to UNICEF, the World Food Program, the Food Agriculture Organization, and the Office of the Coordination of Human Affairs, this is a problem for the whole Horn of Africa. It's due to a combination of rising food prices brought on by the Russian-Ukrainian war and extreme weather shifts, and a continuous lack of rainfall brought on by extreme weather shifts at home. All of these culminate in 213,000 people in Somalia at risk of starvation, which is 3 times higher than normal. In the United States, Californians, Arizonans, and Nevadans should expect to see temperatures well above 100 degrees Fahrenheit or 38 degrees Celsius Thursday through Saturday. I looked it up and my area of California won't be too bad, but Sacramento is going to hit about 105 degrees Fahrenheit, which is about 40.5 degrees Celsius. Phoenix, Arizona will likely hit 113 degrees Fahrenheit or 45 degrees Celsius, and Los Angeles could hit 108 degrees Fahrenheit or 42 degrees Celsius. These temperatures are while we're moving into wildfire season in the worst drought we've experienced in 1,200 years. So stay safe, everyone, and hope that our utility companies don't spark any flames. Now on to some climate victories. More than 70 NGOs and activist groups from around the world have formed a carbon bomb defusal network to share expertise on how to halt and shut down fossil fuel projects. A study out of the University of Leeds recently uncovered 195 carbon bomb projects, gigantic oil and gas projects that would result in at least a billion CO2 emissions over their lifetimes, which is about 18 years worth of global carbon emissions. I first covered this on the May 13th episode. 60% of the fossil fuel projects have already begun pumping. The U.S. has the most carbon bomb projects, 22 to be exact. Think the Permian Basin and the Gulf of Mexico and even the Foot Range in Colorado. The 22 projects have the potential to emit 4 years' worth of global CO2 emissions alone. Saudi Arabia has the second largest amount of carbon bomb projects, followed by Russia, Qatar, Iraq, Canada, China, and Brazil. The defusal network called LeaveItInTheGround.org, or LINGO, plans to bring legal challenges and acts of activism to these projects. They're looking for any interested activists, journalists, and lawyers to contact them. Their website is linked in the source list. Meanwhile, the International Voluntary Carbon Markets Integrity Initiative just launched the Claims Code of Practice to increase transparency in private company climate pledges. The initiative was set up last year by the UK, the Children's Investment Fund Foundation, and the UN Environment Programme to determine which carbon offset schemes brought in by companies were legit and which were just greenwashing their emissions reductions plans. Well, the new code will rank corporations gold, silver, and bronze based on how well their plans rely on carbon offsets. Basically, net zero pledges would likely get bronze ratings because they require potentially unreliable carbon offsets to reach true emissions reductions. Carbon neutrality plans would probably get a silver rating because they don't require carbon offsets to reach emissions reduction. And then the gold ranking will most likely go towards carbon negative goals, the ones who plan to reach carbon neutrality on their own merit and also invest in carbon offsets to reduce even more emissions. The standard is expected to be finalized by early 2023, but it will soon be road tested by Google, Unilever, and Hitachi, whatever that means. This will hopefully make it easier for more consumers to easily see where companies are at with producing reasonable climate plans. Over in Australia, Tiwi Islanders are legally challenging the $4.7 billion Barbossa offshore gas project, saying the companies Santos and SKENS did not consult the islanders before starting the project. They say the project will hurt their food sources, culture, and way of life. The project involves drilling the Timor Sea and pumping the gas to the existing Darwin LNG facility. This isn't the first time the Tiwi Islanders tried to challenge this project. Last month, they and the Larakia people lost their challenge against the South Korean export credit agencies who sponsored the project. I'll let you know if this challenge does any better. And over in the U.S., a coalition of climate groups announced the formation of the Climate Votes Project, a $100 million ad campaign ahead of the midterm election season. The group will put money towards state and local candidates with aggressive climate policy proposals. The money goes towards targeting climate-focused voters that might have otherwise sat out the election. Some groups funding this initiative are the Climate Reality Action Fund, Environmental Defense Fund Action Vote, League of Conservation Voters Victory Fund, Natural Resources Fund Council Action Votes, and NextGen PAC. The project will also put money towards ads targeting politicians who receive the most money from fossil fuels and oppose aggressive climate action. Candidates like Pennsylvania Lieutenant Governor candidate John Fetterman, who recently won the state's Democratic Senate primary. They should advertise on YouTube because I feel like if they were, I would have already seen them, especially because Californians' election day was yesterday. Now for some climate fails. In an ethical U-turn, the world's largest money manager, BlackRock, said it will not act as the environmental police, saying that it's wrong to ask the private sector to ensure companies do more to tackle climate change. In January 2020, though, BlackRock was one of the first financial firms to recognize climate risk. But then came Texas's effort to divest from companies that want to boycott fossil fuels, and BlackRock rolled back its climate plans to stay in the state's market. And then last month, the company said it would stop supporting shareholder climate resolutions, saying it didn't want to be micromanaged. So we saw this coming, but the announcement is disappointing for climate-conscious citizens nonetheless. Speaking of ethical U-turns, the new Australian Resources Minister, King, told fossil fuel companies to look for more gas to integrate into Australian energy supply. The new Prime Minister Albanese then called on coal plants to all go back online to reduce the energy crisis. This strategy is a huge letdown for climate-conscious citizens who are hoping this administration will take the climate crisis seriously. In the first episode of this month, I talked about how China has the world's largest renewable fleet. Well, now the Chinese Economic Information Daily reports that China's grid hasn't caught up enough to take in this influx of clean energy. According to government data, 12% of the wind energy produced in Inner Mongolia didn't make it onto the grid, and this is also true for 10% of solar power in Qinghai. The utilization of wind and solar power in the windy and sunny Gansu province actually dropped from representing 97% of the province's power in 2021 to below 90% this year. Part of this lack of utilization is due to the intermittency of these power sources. But China is trying to remedy these problems by developing a network of long-distance power lines to get the energy where it needs to be and an increase of energy storage adoption. The Chinese Global Times reported that Inner Mongolia pledged to reduce its reliance on energy intensity consumption per unit of GDP output compared to 5 years ago by 15% by 2025. That would basically get Inner Mongolia's energy supply's reliance on coal to drop to below 75% by 2025. It would also increase clean energy consumption by 18%. It seems like if they already have 12% more wind energy to harness, that could be very doable. And while the UK windfall tax has secured about £5 billion from fossil fuel companies that have produced record profits off the Ukrainian crisis, fossil fuel companies got the green light on more than £8 billion by taking advantage of tax breaks. Chancellor of the Equator Sunex Levy offered 91 pence for every £1 of investment made by companies. This was meant to encourage the companies to build up domestic energy supplies. But naturally, the fossil fuel companies are going to do this in the form of North Sea development, and there are about £8 billion worth of projects in the North Sea right now that are waiting a final investment decision. Now to a chemical news story over in the U.S. The Environmental Protection Agency reached an agreement with environmental groups over pollution levels in Cancer Alley, which is a part of the U.S. that is completely surrounded by petrochemical and other large emitting sites. In the agreement, the EPA will undertake overdue reviews of air pollutant standards for the industrial plants. A proposed rule incorporating any changes will be proposed in March 2023, and the final version will be presented March 2024. I guess we'll have to wait and see in March how seriously the EPA will take this matter. Lastly, I want to finish off with some ongoing news. UN climate talks started in Germany Tuesday and will last 2 weeks. Top discussion topics include climate finance, particularly the money promised to emerging economies to help them with their clean energy transitions. Emerging economies want to add money for damages and losses to the list as climate change batters their countries. So far, the only developed country to recognize the need to pay for damages and losses is Scotland. There are concerns that talks on the pandemic, the war, and inflation are already overshadowing climate ambitions, but it's still too soon to tell how productive this conference will be. I'll keep you posted. And that was your climate news for Wednesday, June 8th. If you like the work I do, please follow this podcast, give it a 5-star rating, leave a review, and consider checking out the Becosphere Climate Corner YouTube channel. Remember to talk about the climate crisis every single day and to support your local news organizations. Bye for now.